curated to encourage leaders at all levels to be their best selves and to bring a fresh, curious perspective to today's issues in business and culture. Our goal is to equip listeners with the resources to always move forward.
Welcome to the Always Forward Leadership Podcast. I'm Carla Solnes, and I'm really excited about today's relaunch of a previous podcast. I'm a little bit of a bookworm, and I first read Gretchen Rubin's book, The Happiness Project, a while ago, and I've just been fascinated with her ever since. Super excited that she's coming to Catalyst University here in Kalamazoo, Michigan on June 20th. Ron, you had a chance to talk to her on this interview. What can the listening audience expect to hear from Gretchen through your conversation?
It was a great interview, and I'm so pumped that she's going to be joining us on June 20th at Catalyst University. Gretchen shares really from her book, The Four Tendencies, and she talks about the four personality types, kind of a brief explanation of each. And then she really talks about how we have to tailor our communications and work styles around people's tendency. Around here, we call that you got to speak to people in their own language, and people need to know that they're valued, not change, and I'll like you. And so you got to value people where they're at. And that really is what this podcast is all about. And I hope you enjoy it as much as I did.
Let's take a listen.
Hey, welcome to the Always Forward Leadership Podcast. I'm Ron Kitchens, and I am so excited to have Gretchen Rubin on with us today. And some of you will know Gretchen, like my wife. We were talking this morning at breakfast, and she asked what I was doing today. And I told her that we had Gretchen coming on the podcast, and she said, oh, I loved her on Oprah. So you're like famous for your bona fide with my wife, Lynn, because you're an Oprah's posse. But a lot will know you from your TEDx talks. I was looking at my shelf. I have at least four Gretchen Rubin books on the shelf. The latest one, which my management team is actually all reading together, is The Four Tendencies. So you can tell how excited I am. I'm doing all the talking. So Gretchen, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
I'm so happy to be talking to you today. Thanks for having me.
So give us the kind of Cliff Notes version of your leadership journey and how you go from, you know, being a clerk for one of America's, I think, heroes, Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, to writer, thought leader. And on this area, you know, I think when I first began to know your work, it was on this area of happiness. How does that all happen to you?
Well, you're absolutely right. I started my career in law and I was clerking for Justice Sandra Day O'Connor. When I realized that I actually wanted to be a writer. That's when I first realized, you know what? I'm doing all this work in my free time, but this is the kind of stuff that people would be doing if they were getting ready to write a book. And some people write a book as their job. Maybe I should try to do that. And I went to the bookstore and got a book called something like How to Write and Sell Your Nonfiction Book Proposal and Just Follow the Directions. So I started that, and that was my first book. And the book that you mentioned, The Happiness Project, is probably the book where a lot of people became aware of me as a writer for the first time. It was actually my fourth book. So I was one of these things where after 10 years of work,
overnight success.
Yeah, it became an overnight success. And then ever since I wrote about happiness, I've really been in this area of sort of what I would call human nature, happiness, good habits, the four tendencies. And even in my books before that, when I was writing a biography of Winston Churchill, say, all my books are really about some aspect of human nature. And I'm very fortunate because I kind of get obsessed with things. This happens to me all the time. Like right now, I'm obsessed with color. I've been obsessed with the sense of smell. I'm also obsessed with the placebo response. And I'll do all this research. And sometimes it turns into a book. And sometimes it's just for my own pleasure and edification. But I'm really
trivial pursuit at the bar.
Yeah. But I'm just lucky that when something is interesting enough for me to really pursue it for like years, then I can write a book about it. And then what I'm doing for fun becomes my job, which is wonderful.
So I think it's fascinating that I've known there's probably a half a dozen or more fiction writers, John Grisham being the most famous, who transitioned from law to writing. But for you to reach clearly the pinnacle, you were a really smart lawyer and did very well in school to get a clerkship at the Supreme Court to transition to kind of this thought leader writing. Is that really what drove you to law, was that you were so interested in the research side? I think most great nonfiction writers are, they're some of the most interesting people I'm ever around because they're fascinated by the pursuit of knowledge. Is that you or?
You know, I think I went to law school for all the wrong reasons, but very common reasons. You know, I was good at research and writing. I was good at school. My father was a lawyer who was very, very happy. He's very happy with his practice. I thought it's a great education. It'll keep my options open. I can always change my mind later. It's great preparation. It's the kind of thing I can do well. So I went to law school, not because I really passionately wanted to be a lawyer, but just because it seemed like a good idea. And I'm glad I went to law school. It all worked out really well. But one of the things that I think as I look back on my own career and when I'm talking to other people who are making decisions about graduate school or whatever, if you go to law school, go because you want to be a lawyer. Don't go because you can't think of anything else to do with yourself, because there's a lot of things you could do. And it's a lot of time. It's a lot of money. It's a lot of effort to go to law school. So it's not something to do just because you can't be bothered to figure out what else you want to do. And as I said, it worked out great. I had an amazing experience in all kinds of ways, but I didn't go there mindfully. I didn't go there on purpose. I went there basically by default. And that's not the way now that I try very hard now not to make decisions in that way. I try now to really think like, why am I doing this? What am I going to get out of this? And not to just do something really so lightly. Sometimes, you know, you can make a decision lightly, even though it involves a tremendous amount of work. I mean, going to law school was a tremendous amount of work, but I entered into it in kind of a, you know, oh, well, seems like a good idea kind of spirit.
I find that fascinating. And I always find people who pivot and are successful in that pivot, you know, truly aspirational. You know, jump ship a little bit. You know, you've written books about happiness. You've written books about habits. The most current is The Four Tendencies, which is really about personality types and knowing yourself and knowing those around you. Kind of what inspired you? What took you on that path for that? Because it's something I too share that desire to learn more about.
So you're exactly right. My most recent book is this book about this personality framework that I discovered or created, depending on how you look at it. And I was led into it by the work from my previous book. My second most recent book is called Better Than Before. And it's all about how to change habits. How do we make or break habits? And so as I was doing the research for that book, I was looking at all the different ways that people could successfully make or break habits. And I found 21 different ways. And sometimes people are like, oh, 21 is too many. That's like, you know, give me three, give me the top three. But really, it's good that there are 21, because what I found is that like some work very well for some people and not at all for other people. And some are available to us at certain times of our lives, but not available to us at all times of our life. So you want to have a big selection so you can pick and choose the ones that will work for you. And you might need to use five or six different strategies to change an important habit like exercising. But one of the things that I became struck by as I was researching this and trying to understand when and how people successfully changed habits was that I saw these patterns that I couldn't really explain. When people could or couldn't form habits, or even how they viewed habits. Like when I would tell people that I was writing a book about habits, a few people would say something to me like, oh my gosh, why would you want to write about like such a distasteful subject? Like, oh my gosh, yuck. And I thought that's interesting because to me, the idea of habits feels very freeing and exciting. I love the idea of habits. That's probably why I'm writing a book about it. But some people didn't feel the way I did. So I had to take that into account in my model. And then I had lunch with a friend who said something that just like blew my mind and really got me to focus on what became the Four Tendencies framework. And she said something that's very much like something that many, many people have said to me. She said, I know I would be happier if I exercised. And the weird thing is when I was in high school, I was on the track team and I never missed track practice. So why can't I go running now? And I thought, well, why? It is the same person. It's the same behavior. At one time, this habit was effortless. Now she can't do it. How do you explain that? What's going on? There's so many things that you could say makes the situation different, but what is really at play? Because that's crucial to understand. Because if she wants to be able to exercise now, the way she exercised in high school, how do we replicate that? And that's what fundamentally led me into the Four Tendencies. It took so much work. It's like definitely the hardest intellectual challenge that I've ever faced was trying to understand how certain patterns fit together, what patterns were even relevant, what was the lens through what unified all these different patterns that I was seeing in people. Like all the people that if you said, how do you feel about New Year's resolutions? A certain number of people will say, I would keep a resolution when it's important to me, but I wouldn't do it on January 1st because January 1st is an arbitrary date. They all say that. I'm like, that's interesting because the arbitrariness of January 1st never really bothered me. But for some people, that's a big thing. How do you explain that? And so eventually, after lots of false starts, the four tendencies became clear to me.
So without giving too much away, and I want to encourage, as our listeners know, I believe in reading and I believe you should buy the book. The books that we feature on this podcast ought to be textbooks, and you ought to be marking them up the same way you did in college. And so I encourage you to buy this. It's really important work. But without spoiling too much, can you give us a brief rundown of what the personality types are and then kind of insight into what yours is, if you'll share that?
Sure, of course. The four tendencies are upholder, questioner, obliger, and rebel. And what this looks at is how you respond to expectations. And so each of us faces two kinds of expectations. We face outer expectations, things that other people expect from us, like a work deadline or a request from a friend. And we face inner expectations, my own desire to keep a New Year's resolution, my own desire to get back into practicing guitar. So upholders readily meet outer and inner expectations. They meet the work deadline, they keep the New Year's resolution without much fuss. They want to know what other people expect from them, but their expectations for themselves are just as important. Then questioners. Questioners question all expectations. They'll do something if they think it makes sense. So they're turning everything into an inner expectation. If it meets their inner standard, they will do it no problem. If it fails their inner standard, they will resist. They tend to hate anything arbitrary, inefficient, or unjustified. Then there are obligers. Obligers readily meet outer expectations, but they struggle to meet inner expectations. So this is like my friend on the track team. Now I know what her issue is. She's an obliger. When she had a team and a coach expecting her to showed up, no problem. But when she's just trying to go on her own, it's a struggle. And then finally, rebels. Rebels resist all expectations, outer and inner alike. They want to do what they want to do in their own way, in their own time. They can do anything they want to do, anything they choose to do. But if you ask or tell them to do something, they're very likely to resist. And typically, they don't even like to tell themselves what to do. Like, they wouldn't sign up for a 10 a.m. woodworking class on Saturdays because they'll think, I don't know what I'm going to want to do at 10 a.m. on Saturday. So I'm not going to sign. Just the idea that somebody's expecting me to show up is going to make me not want to go. So those are the four. And you asked about my tendency. My tendency is upholder. So, which is interesting because of the four, upholder is the second to the smallest. The biggest tendency for both men and women is obliger. That you either are an obliger or you have many obligers in your life. It's a big tendency. And behind them is questioner. Rebel is the smallest tendency. It's a very conspicuous tendency, but it's small. And my tendency, upholder, is only slightly larger. So I think that's one of the reasons that I was able to see the four tendencies, because I had noticed I was different from a lot of people. I would say to myself, I don't understand why these people are doing this, or why they're struggling with this, or why they have this kind of problem or conflict or frustration. I don't get it. And I was like, okay, how am I different? Now I know, because I'm an upholder. There's not that many upholders.
As am I. When I went through it, I'm an upholder as well. So,
oh, you are.
When I looked at it, I thought, oh, I want to be a rebel. And then I realized, yeah, no, I'm not a rebel at all. But, you know, one of the things that when we talk about personality types and teams, I get regularly from leaders that's all great to know, but what do I do with it? How do I, as a leader, utilize this to help me be either be a better leader or help me lead people better? And what would you say to that?
The nice thing about the four tendencies, it's extremely practical because it gives you a really serious set of instructions for each tendency. So one of the first things you want to realize is that when you know your own tendency, you can think about how you may or may not be able to deal effectively with another person. And when you know someone else's tendency, you can think about how you might set things up to give that person greater success and so that you have less burnout, less procrastination, less conflict. So let's take an example. So one of the most helpful things, I think, from the four tendencies is that if there is an obliger who's struggling to meet inner expectations, which by definition they are, what they need is outer accountability. Obligers need outer accountability even to meet an inner expectation. So if you're an obliger and you want to read more, join a book group. If you want to exercise more, sign up with a trainer, take a class, work out with a friend who's going to be annoyed if you don't show up. Because obligers need accountability. Now, how this could come up as a problem in the workplace is, okay, upholders like me don't need accountability. We think everybody should just be able to do everything on their own time. Like, just do it whatever makes sense to you. If I'm an upholder and I'm managing an obliger, I might very easily say something like, hey, you know what? Could you do this XYZ project for me? You know, whenever it makes sense for you, just get back to me whenever you have time. But that's not effective for an obliger because an obliger needs accountability. be much better to say to an obliger, hey, I need this by Friday. Can you get it to me by Friday? Now, what if I'm dealing with a questioner? If I just say, hey, get it to me by Friday, that questioner might be like, why Friday? That's an arbitrary date. I don't understand that. Like, that's a dumb assignment. I don't even understand why you need that report. If I'm talking to a questioner, I want to explain reasons. I want to say, hey, I really need this report. It's going to help me write my own report, which is due in 2 weeks. And if you give it to me by Friday, I'm going to be able to read it on the airplane because I've got a long flight on Saturday. It would be most efficient if I had it by Friday. Okay, a questioner could understand that. It's more efficient. It's more effective. You're not giving me arbitrary deadlines or giving me make work. You're explaining why certain things need to be done. Now, if I'm dealing with a rebel, rebels want to act from choice and freedom. So it's sort of like you want to say to them, you can do this if you want. This is something that works for you. They love a challenge, you know? So you might say something like, I don't know. They're telling me they don't think your team could get this done by Friday, but I think you, I don't know, maybe you can. What do you think? Or, you know, if you get this done by Friday, then you won't have to go to the staff meeting on Monday. And they'll be like, great, I don't want to go to the staff meeting. I'll do it by Friday so I don't have to go on Monday. So you can tailor communications and kind of workflow in order to take advantage. So another thing is like, so questioners often drain and overwhelm other people with their constant questioning. They're just like, why? And other people get annoyed by that. So let's say I'm a manager and I'm explaining, okay, corporate wants us to use this new software. So I'm explaining this to everybody and I could give my little presentation and then I could say, and if you feel like you've heard enough about why we're making this switch to this new software, please feel free to go back to your desk. If you would like to stay here and ask more questions about why we've decided this is the more efficient software for us to use, I would be pleased to stay here and answer any questions that you have.
And one of the things the book did for me is on this issue of questioner, I've been, you know, managing and leading people for 35 years and I could never lead questioner. It's like, what is the deal with all the questions?
Yes.
We've all agreed on the mission. Here's what we're going to go do. Now go do it. This is awesome. And my positivity is high and I'm all about it. And, you know, this are draining my spirit with all the questions that feel challenging until I kind of read the book and realized, oh, that's what I'm reacting to. And so now I know, because we just got to the point we just wouldn't hire questioners. Well, that's a really bad strategy, but it was protecting the energy. And so now we have to, as you said, understand that we have a mix of people and people need the same information relayed in multiple different ways. And so it really was changing for my leadership. So I'm glad you gave that analogy because that really did make the difference for me.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear that. Yeah. One of the things questioners need to learn in terms of managing themselves is they need to learn how to ask questions in a way that seem constructive instead of making people feel drained and overwhelmed or feeling like you're questioning my judgment, you're undermining my authority. You know, like if you have a questioner child, they could seem really impertinent to a teacher. They don't mean to be impertinent. They're just like, why do I have to learn the multiplication tables if I could just look it up on my phone twice as fast? It's like they want to know the answer to that. They're not just being cheeky and saying to something like, because all fourth graders have to do this or because I'm your teacher and I say so, like that's going to be illegitimate to a questioner. So you want to really stop and say, let me answer your question, and then they can follow. But they often are seen as being like disrespectful or not team players by people who don't understand like the spirit of their questioning.
Yeah. And that's, you know, from a leader standpoint, it really did make a dramatic difference. And it's something that I know that I've got to constantly be on guard of, that I don't discount questioners just because it feels like they're challenging or that they're needing validation by their question.
Well, they can feel like they're slowing things down. It can feel like, let's just get on with it. Like we've got our program. Like you say, it's an energy thing where you're like, let's just go. And this is what you'll also like upholders. Because I, as an upholder, I need to learn to question because I too readily will do things like go to law school without questioning. But I can get impatient because I'm like, oh my gosh, let's just get on with it. We could be done by now if we would just do it. Like, why are we blah, 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 blah. Again, but it's like questioners have a lot of value to add. And I think you're very right. If you don't know about the tendencies, you could start trying to like sort of shut certain tendencies out. And then you lose all the strengths of that tendency because each of the tendencies has tremendous strengths to bring. And if you start shutting out one of the tendencies, then you're going to lose access to all the strengths. You know, rebels have great strengths, obligers have great strengths, questioners have great strengths, upholders have great strengths. If you cut that out, you're really hobbling yourself as a team.
Absolutely. You need a balance. But is there, you know, one kind of unifying leadership characteristic or, you know, what's critically important that all characteristics have got to share? Is there that one thing?
Absolutely. And the one thing is self-knowledge. Because like, if you know yourself as an upholder, you know your strengths, you know your weaknesses, you can build that into the system. You can say, I need an advisor who's going to force me to question, why are we doing this? I need a rebel who reminds me we don't have to do things the way we've always done them before. Just because they say we have to do it this way, we can do it another way. I need an obliger who's always going to go that extra mile. But if you're a rebel, you could say to yourself, you know, I understand, like I hate the feeling of being locked in. I would love to walk in and tell my team, hey, we're going to play hooky and go to the museum this afternoon. I have to realize like my team might not appreciate that. They don't want to have their schedule disrupted. I have to think about not everybody's going to respond the way I am. I need to take that into account. I have to think about the mix of people that I'm managing, but I can only really understand how I might be different from other people if I understand myself. I think understanding other people always has to be rooted in understanding yourself, because if you don't understand yourself, you don't understand how people could see the world in a different way. And it's just dramatically different how people can view the simplest thing. And I think the greatest example of this, and this is like my, I would love to write a coffee table book about this, is the signs in office kitchen. The minute I go to a new office, I make a beeline for the kitchen to look at like, what are the signs that people have just like made themselves? Because you see it all there, all the different ways that people perceive obligation, citizenship, duty, cleanliness. I mean, everybody's coming at it from a different angle. Like people do not see the world in the same way. But when you understand yourself, you can take that into account. If you don't understand yourself, then you probably just assume that everybody's like you, and they're not. And that's going to end up being a problem as you try to manage people who are different from you.
Yeah, if everybody's like you, there's a whole lot that's not going to get done.
Well, and they just won't be.
Yeah.
Even obligers, which is the biggest tendency, it's like inconceivable that you would have like a team of five people who are all obligers. It's just like the world doesn't work like that. Or it would be very unusual. You'd kind of have to try to do that. Yeah. And then it would be very out of balance. Yeah. So you want to be able to take it into account and work efficiently and help people achieve their aims, you know. And it's funny. It's like sometimes it's like the simplest change in vocabulary or like a very subtle change in the way a process is set up or the way something's framed can make a huge difference in how responsive and enthusiastic people feel about whatever the task is. It doesn't have to be a big deal, but you do have to think about subtle differences that might set people off.
That is awesome. And again, the book's The Four Tendencies by Gretchen Rubin. And if you want more of Gretchen, she's going to be joining us at Catalyst University 2019 as one of our speakers or professors, as we call them. And so I'm really excited to have her here in person. But Gretchen, if people want to follow you, if they want to go more in depth with your leadership beyond just buying a book, are there better ways to follow you?
Yeah, I have a podcast called Happier with Gretchen Rubin, where I talk every week with my sister, Elizabeth Kraft, who's an obliger. She's also a...
and it's a great podcast. It's definitely a sister's podcast.
TV writer, producer in Hollywood. And so we talk about how to be happier each week. And I have a website, GretchenRubin.com, where I have all kinds of information and resources and downloads and things that for anybody who wants to do a deeper discussion guide. If you want to like join a conversation about the four tendencies, I have an app called the Better App, and you just go onto the app store and search for Better Gretchen Rubin, or it's betterapp.us if you're on desktop. And that's just a free app where it's all conversations about the four tendencies. It's especially useful if you're an obliger and you want to join or start an accountability group for whatever, if it's for your PhD thesis or gardening or exercising or whatever. You need accountability if you're an obliger. So there's a lot of obligers giving each other accountability there. And then I'm on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, every place under the name Gretchen Rubin. And then once a week, I have something on Facebook called Ask Gretchen Rubin Live, where I have a live conversation.
See, I didn't have that one. I got to follow that.
Yeah. I'm all over the place talking about happiness and good habits and human nature and the four tendencies. So, and I love to hear from readers and listeners and viewers about their own experiences and questions and illustrations of the four tendencies or anything in action. So yeah, get in touch if you have something to say.
Gretchen, you are absolutely changing people's lives. I am so appreciative because I know at times in a writer's life that you launch your ideas and your books and podcasts into the world and you don't get a lot of feedback sometimes. And just so you know how much I appreciate you and the impact you're having and the impact I know you're going to have when you're with us at Catalyst next year. I'm so glad that I got to spend this afternoon with you.
Well, thanks so much. I so enjoyed our conversation.
Awesome. We'll talk to you soon.
Wow, Ron, that was a great interview with Gretchen. It made me even more excited to see her live on the Catalyst University stage coming up on June 20th, to be exact. So I hope that everyone in the listening audience is able to join us for that big event. Gretchen will be there. Several other of our favorites will be there. It's going to be a great time. Thanks for a great interview, Ron.
Hey, it was awesome. And we'll see y'all next week.
Thanks for joining us. We hope today's conversation inspired you to keep moving forward on your leadership journey. To connect with Ron, you can tweet him at Ron Kitchens or send him a message via ronkitchens.com. If you are listening via iTunes, please leave a review. It really helps us connect to you, grow our impact, and keep moving always forward.